Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal this morning starts right after this.
Hi, I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business called Podlexing, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. With so many job boards out there, how can you know which one will produce the best talent? Realistically, to fill the position fast and with the perfect candidate, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can do it with a single click with ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter.com lets you post to more than 40 job sites at once. ZipRecruiter.com also posts your job on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Just post once and watch the qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. You can screen applicants, rate them, and hire the right people fast. Try ZipRecruiter free right now and find out why it's been used by over 100,000 businesses. And right now, listeners of this program can try ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
The Tea Party is licking its wounds. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Gina Cervetti. Welcome into Wednesday, May 21st. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Republican primary voters in a handful of states with Senate races chose candidates favored by top party officials and their business allies.
There have been a series of deadly bombings in the Nigerian city of Jos. Find out the group believed responsible.
J.P. Morgan is preparing to pump $100 million into the bankrupt city of Detroit. You'll hear the strategy.
And the recent rise in emergency room visits, especially among those with mental health problems.
And the problem is that people who have an acute mental health emergency go to the emergency room. There's just no beds. At one hospital I spoke to had to board someone in the ER for more than 30 days.
Wall Street Journal reporter Stephanie Armour on our nation's busier emergency rooms. She's here later in the hour. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell easily defeated a conservative primary challenger in the GOP primary in Kentucky, capturing 60% of the vote.
For 5.5 years, the powers that be in Washington have treated the people of this state with contempt. And tonight, I have a simple message for all of them. Those days are numbered.
Yesterday was a day when other GOP primary voters in Georgia and Oregon elevated Senate candidates favored by top party officials and their business allies. In Oregon, GOP leaders cheered the Senate primary victory of Monica Webby, a pediatric neurologist thought to have broader appeal than her more conservative opponents in a state that leans Democrat.
Lord knows that I am not perfect. We all make mistakes. And when I do, I'm no different than the rest of you. I pick myself back up and I get going again and try to make things better. I promise you I'll continue to do that as your senator.
In the Georgia Republican Senate primary, business executive David Perdue and Congressman Jack Kingston were the top vote getters in a field of seven and will face each other in a July runoff. In Pennsylvania, meanwhile, businessman Tom Wolf, who spent millions on his campaign, won the Democratic primary for governor.
To take the message for a better future for Pennsylvania to all the voters in Pennsylvania and make sure that we do what we can to deliver on that promise.
He'll face Republican Governor Tom Corbett in one of the nation's most closely watched races. Democrats feel they can recapture the governor's seat in Harrisburg. Get some analysis of yesterday's primary results now from Caitlin Huey Burns, reporter at Real Clear Politics. She's with us on the T-Mobile hotline live this morning. Caitlin, what do you think conservatives and Tea Party groups are saying this morning?
Well, it was interesting to watch how quickly some of the outside conservative groups rallied around Mitch McConnell soon after he beat back a challenge from Matt Bevin. Groups had said, you know, it's time to get behind McConnell in this Kentucky race and beat Allison Lundgren Grimes, the Democrat running against him. But otherwise, there are some questions about how influential Tea Party groups and candidates are. are. And there's also some question about whether they've now integrated themselves into the party, whether they've become more organized, or, you know, whether they've started to pick candidates who are more electable. I think we'll continue to ask some of those questions in primaries coming up throughout the summer.
Well, it's interesting because their money cannot be ignored, I guess, or their support, right, as these Republicans head into general mm-hmm. elections.
Right. At the same time, more establishment-oriented groups and committees, and also the business community, is kind of making a comeback. I was in Georgia last night, and the Chamber of Commerce had backed Jack Kingston and put some money behind him and kind of helped him to that victory as well. So that's something to keep an eye on, too.
All right. So are there other primaries, I guess, where conservatives or Tea Party folks still feel they have a shot?
Well, there is a primary in Mississippi coming up in June against Thad Cochran, and that will be another race to watch. The establishment is behind him, while the Tea Party or more conservative groups are behind his opponent, McDaniel. There's been some controversies in that race. McDaniel's been accused of playing some tough politics there, but that will be interesting to watch in June as another example of this. There's also a primary in South Carolina where Lindsey Graham is working for his reelection and seems to have also made strides against conservative challengers there.
We're speaking with Caitlin Huey Burns, reporter at Real Clear Politics, analyzing yesterday's primary results. What do you think has turned the tide in terms of these more mainstream candidates getting the support from voters?
A couple of different things. I think the establishment and oriented committees have really made an effort to get behind candidates, whereas before they would kind of wait for the primary process to figure itself out. They've really kind of stood up to these outside groups because they've learned some lessons from 2012, where more electable candidates lost and less electable ones went on to the general election and went on to lose seats that were quite winnable for the Republican Party and may have cost them the majority in the Senate. This time, the Senate's at stake, and Republicans want to take control of it. Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, who wants to become Senate Majority Leader, has played a big role in that as well.
I presume that these conservative groups or candidates are saying that, at the very least, they're affecting the debates and some of the issues.
Absolutely. We've seen since 2010, when it comes to fiscal issues and spending, they have had an impact in terms of the candidates who did go to Congress and kind of steer that debate. It remains to be seen, however, you know, after this primary season, whether Republican leaders start to, in Congress, put some tougher issues on the Senate and House floor to debate, things like immigration reform and other measures that have been opposed by more conservative members, whether they kind of take some energy from these primaries and put them towards legislation. It's going to be a tough year and a long year in terms of campaigning, so this may be something that we see maybe at the end of the year or early next year, depending on who controls the chambers.
Caitlin, thanks for a few minutes as always. Caitlin Huey Burns, reporter at Real Clear Politics, with us live this morning. By the way, given yesterday's results, do you think the Tea Party influence is beginning to die off a little in Washington? That's the poll question on our website today. You can vote and see results at WSJThisMorning.com. 14 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
We help farmers make the best use of their land, which means healthier crops, higher yields, and less harvesting hours, which is good news for a growing population and good news for the environment. BASF. the chemical company.
America was built by innovators and dreamers like you. To celebrate, LegalZoom dedicated this month to innovation by making it easy for you to file trademark or copyright applications, incorporate your business, or form an LLC. Call or visit LegalZoom.com. They'll provide the personal attention you need and help take care of all the details. For a limited time, get a special price on trademark and copyright applications by using the referral code WSJ at checkout. LegalZoom provides legal help through independent attorneys and self-help, but they're not a law firm. Thanks for being with us. The Republican committee chairman investigating the IRS's reported targeting of conservative groups has issued a subpoena to the Justice Department, saying department officials have obstructed his panel's probe. Congressman Daryl Issa of California says in a recent committee interview, one Justice Department official was told not to answer the committee's questions 34 times. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter John McKinnon with the story in Washington. John, what are they after?
Basically, the committee is looking for documents that would help them understand why the Justice Department was coordinating with the IRS in May of 2013. This is about a year ago, and at this time, the IRS and Justice were having these discussions about whether and how to criminally prosecute certain nonprofit groups, tax-exempt groups that may have misrepresented some of their status, some of their intentions to the IRS.
And what questions are they hoping to have answered, John?
Well, the committee wants to know a lot of things from this official, and particularly is interested in sort of the level of cooperation between the IRS and the Justice Department. Obviously, the IRS has gotten into a lot of trouble for reportedly targeting conservative groups for special scrutiny and sort of unusual treatment as they sought tax-exempt status. And the basically Republicans in Congress suspect that this was politically motivated and was directed by Democratic higher-ups who worried about these conservative, nonprofit, tax-exempt type groups. So currently, Republicans are trying to figure out whether the Justice Department may have worked with the IRS in some of these efforts.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter John McKinnon in Washington. Do we expect the Justice Department to cooperate with the subpoena?
It's not clear whether the Justice Department is going to do a lot, candidly, in prior years, in even prior administrations. There has been a lot of foot dragging on the part of the executive branch. This occurred in the Bush administration, and you know, to some degree, it's happened in the Obama administration. The executive branch is not always as responsive to congressional inquiries as members of Congress would like, and that's I think a pattern that has been seen a lot in recent years, and it could well be that the Justice Department will be slow in giving Congress everything it wants. That's a nice way of putting it.
Thanks, John. Wall Street Journal reporter John McKinnon from D.C. 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is here. She has America's first news.
Good morning. Primary voters in a half dozen states pick candidates for November elections that will decide which party controls Congress. Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell easily beat his Tea Party primary challenger in Kentucky.
For 5.5 years, the powers that be in Washington have treated the people of this state with contempt. And tonight, I have a simple message for all of them. Those days are numbered.
Establishment-backed GOP members also swept away Tea Party rivals in Georgia and Oregon. Pennsylvania businessman Tom Wolf won the Democrats' nomination to challenge Republican Governor Tom Corbett in what will be one of November's top gubernatorial races. Governor Corbett.
We want to keep building a stronger Pennsylvania for you and for future generations. That work begins here and it begins tonight.
Recall costs for General Motors continue to rise as the company issues yet another one. The price tag has hit $1.7 billion, and the carmaker has added another 2.4 million SUVs and pickup trucks to this year's list. The Journal's Jeff Bennett has more.
There are a variety of different reasons that they're being recalled. Some are for seatbelt problems. Others are for shifting issues.
Since the start of the year, GM has recalled over 15 million vehicles, and as Bennett says, the public may be starting to turn against the brand. Carnage in the central Nigerian city of Jos, with at least 118 people dead after three bombs went off in quick succession, with no group taking immediate responsibility. These attacks bore the gruesome hallmarks of Islamist insurgency Boko Haram, the same group that kidnapped almost 300 teenage girls from a high school in April. Petco says that by the end of the year, the store will no longer sell any cat and dog treats made in China over fears that the treats are making the animals ill or worse. FDA investigators say they've gotten more than 4,800 complaints of pet illnesses and more than 1,000 reports of dog deaths after the pets ate these treats. Stock futures this morning a little on the positive side after a negative close. In fact, the Dow was down to its lowest level in 3 weeks, was down about 138 points. Retail stocks took a beating after some of those chains issued their financial reports. And if you use ebook providers Oyster or Scribd, you'll be getting some additional choices. Simon & Schuster has agreed to make available more than 10,000 older titles to the services. Until now, the only one of the big publishers to supply books to either has been HarperCollins.
Oh, all right.
I guess they're concerned that because these are sort of all-you-can-eat subscription services, that it could cannibalize their book sales. That's okay. What the Wall Street Journal is reporting today.
Got it.
I guess okay. I can understand that.
Yep. All right. Very good. Thank you, Gina. 24 minutes after the hour now on the Wall Street Journal this morning. J.P. Morgan Chase sees promise and opportunity in Detroit. The big bank will invest $100 million in the Motor City, the latest effort by an outside private institution aiding the city battling through the nation's largest bankruptcy. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dolan in Motown. Matt, what's behind this?
This investment is not specifically tied to the bankruptcy case, which is still sort of wending its way through the courts, but it's intended to do a couple of things. About half of the $100 million will be for relatively low-cost, long-term financing that would typically be not the kind of financing that the bank would be doing in Detroit. The idea is that it's still a very tough environment to get lending in Detroit for both residential and commercial developments. And then the other half of the $100 million would essentially be for philanthropic efforts, for everything from reducing blight to try to improving workforce skills of those residents in Detroit. And so in this announcement, we'll see, you know, a couple of things happening at once. It's certainly a very large investment.
So I think you alluded to it there a little bit about a possible snowball effect here with Chase jumping in. Might other corporate giants say, you know what, if it's good enough for Chase, we'll follow suit?
That's right. Yeah, no, there are indications that there could be others coming, maybe not to the size of the $100 million that's being pledged by Chase this week. We do know that certainly Chase is not alone when it comes to corporate actors in the city. There have been a number of local businesses that have sought to invest. Dan Gilbert's Quicken Loans, for example, they own more than 40 properties, including some of the largest and most historic of the downtown office buildings. But all you have to do is sort of look back to last year. Goldman Sachs and Warren Buffett came to town to talk about programs to improve entrepreneurial skills and sort of invest in small businesses as a way of trying to jumpstart the economy here. I mean, the reality for Detroit, of course, is that the exodus has been dramatic in the city. The population loss between 2000 and 2010 was 25%. And so the real goal here is how to convince people to live, work, and spend their leisure time in the city again.
Thanks, Matt. Wall Street Journal reporter Matthew Dolan in Detroit. 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Coming up next, where drivers run the most red lights. Building a strong relationship with your team is key for any business. You need to meet and collaborate with coworkers and clients on a regular basis in order to brainstorm, develop quality ideas and solutions, and just work better. But gathering everyone in the same room can be impossible. That's why you need Citrix GoToMeeting, the powerfully simple way to meet in person online from anywhere, anytime. It's so easy. Sign up for GoToMeeting from your computer or mobile device and launch your first meeting in seconds. You'll all be able to share the same screen to collaborate on projects in real time and turn on your webcams to see each other face to face. It's just like being in the same room, even when you're miles apart. Start working smarter today by signing up for your free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button and use the promo code WSJ. That's gotomeeting.com, promo code WSJ.
Powered by the most trusted name in journalism, you're listening to The Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news.
Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, May 21st. Gordon Deal sitting alongside Gina Cervetti. And coming up this half hour, mainstream Republicans win Senate primaries in Kentucky, Georgia, Oregon. Deadly bombings in Nigeria. And on a lighter note, trying to find the right office chair. We'll have that report in about 20 minutes. Time now for an automotive update, and it's brought to you by autotrader.com. Find a great deal on a brand new car at autotrader.com. Compare prices and special offers on new cars from local dealers. autotrader.com, the ultimate new car marketplace. Are you hitting the road this weekend along with millions of other Americans? Here's another thing to watch for: drivers who run red lights. How about this number? More than 3.5 million drivers in 20 states ran a red light in 2013, according to a new report called Safer Roads Report 2014. Melissa Wandel is the president of a group called the National Coalition for Safer Roads. She's with us live this morning. Melissa, thanks for being here. Where is this most likely to happen, the running of red lights?
Good morning. Well, at any of our intersections around our country, we did a study on 20 states and over 2,200 intersections in the country, and then we have 3.5 million drivers in 20 states. So can you imagine what's happening every day at these intersections? That's over 9,000 people running red lights every day at these intersections.
Right.
What are the dangerous and deadly habit?
What are the reasons that most people give? Lazy, they're in a rush, don't care?
You know what? A lot of them are just not. Yeah, they are just trying to beat the light. They're just trying to get where they need to go, and they're not thinking about the people that are in the crossfire or what they could actually do themselves, that they could actually injure or kill themselves, or do the same to somebody else. It's just people. It's not just multitasking in our vehicles anymore. It's the arrogance that's in our vehicles, and of course you have those people that are like, "Oops, you know, I meant to stop, but I didn't." But the majority of the people are just doing it because they can get away with it.
Yeah. Is it true, too, the study broke down the day of the week with the most red light running violations?
They did. Yes, we did. We found that on Fridays from 1 to 5 are when most people are running red lights. And we found, of course, that coming up on Memorial Day weekend is the most dangerous weekend where people are running red lights and being seriously injured and killed. And then we find out that on Sundays, the least amount of people are running red lights. And, you know, around this country, even though we're all crazy multitasking, Sunday still tends to be, you know, more of a quiet day. It could have to do with there's not as many people on the roadways. But yes, Fridays from 1 to 5 is when we have found that most people are running red lights.
Wow.
And that's when my husband was killed, was on a Friday as well. So it rings very true and very close to home.
Right. And obviously this is a big travel weekend, so I guess the odds are always higher.
They really are. And, you know, people are excited to get out of town, or people are excited to, you know, to get off work for the weekend. And people are just not making good driving decisions. You know, we have a problem every day in our intersections anyways, but come to a time when you have some time off, you have some downtime. People are just not making good decisions while traveling in their vehicles, and they need to stop and take a moment because we don't want anyone else being a statistic themselves, and that's one of the reasons why we put the study out there, is to show people that, hey, people do get killed and do get seriously injured by running red lights. It's just not about just getting a fine.
How'd you do the story, or how'd you do the research, rather? Did you go by tickets issued, or did you use red light cameras, or this is people just being honest?
Yes. Yes. No, it was red light cameras. It was the 20 states of these intersections that were studied where red light safety cameras actually are and where tickets were given.
Wow, okay.
And it was, you know, over 2,200 intersections in 20 states.
So other than just to tell people don't do it, I mean, are there ways, say, that you can defend yourself against the potential red light runner?
Yeah, I think you need to be aware of your surroundings always. You know, you just need to get in your vehicle, you need to put your seatbelt on, and you need to just drive. You don't need to worry about turning the radio up. You need to look all around you. You need to put the phone down. You need to make sure that you're stopping, not only stopping yourself at red lights, but before you go on green, look all around. You know, be a defensive driver. You know, I think a lot of times we've taken, driver's ed out of our schools because they've cut back programs, mm-hmm. and people don't know what defensive driving is anymore. But it's just as simple as paying attention yourself, stopping on red. Don't go immediately on green because that's where some of those collisions occur, unfortunately, because somebody is running the red light.
Right. Hey, thanks for a few minutes. Much appreciated. Melissa Wandel, president of the National Coalition for Safer Roads. Boy, pause before going through, even when the light turns green. Take that extra second. 20 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
When I was pregnant, I got more advice than I knew what to do with. What I needed was information I could trust on how to take care of me and my baby. Luckily, United Healthcare has a simple program that helps moms stay on track with their doctors and get the right care and guidance before and after the baby is born. Simple is good right now.
Innovations that work for you. That's health in numbers. United Healthcare.
America was built by innovators and dreamers like you. To celebrate, LegalZoom dedicated this month to innovation by making it easy for you to file trademark or copyright applications, incorporate your business, or form an LLC. Call or visit LegalZoom.com. They'll provide the personal attention you need and help take care of all the details. For a limited time, get a special price on trademark and copyright applications by using the referral code WSJ at checkout. LegalZoom provides legal help through independent attorneys and self-help, but they're not a law firm. By the way, given yesterday's primary results, do you think the Tea Party influence is on the wane in Washington? It's the poll question on our website today. You can vote and see results at WSJThisMorning.com. Early evidence suggests that emergency rooms have become busier since the Affordable Care Act expanded insurance coverage this year, despite Obamacare's goal of reducing unnecessary care in ERs. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Stephanie Armour. Stephanie, what are you hearing?
Basically, what a number of the hospital emergency department directors told me when I spoke to them was that they are seeing patients who've had complaints for quite a long time but haven't come in. And when they ask them, why are you coming in, they're saying, well, now I have insurance. So that's what we're hearing from some of the hospitals.
Is there a region of the country that is seeing this more so than others?
It really does vary in terms of the type of hospital and the payer mix and the basic age grouping of the population. But one hospital told us that in the states that have expanded Medicaid, they've seen more than a 20% increase, which is a challenge for some ERs that are already at or over capacity. But at the same time, there are others who say, look, this increase perhaps is due to the weather or a certain kind of flu season, that it's really too early to be tying this to the health care reform law. I did sense some frustration. One hospital that typically reduces their staff over the summer because the snowbirds go home from Arizona says they're not even going to reduce them, that their April volume was the highest it's been in 2.5 years.
So what do doctors and hospitals plan on doing about this?
The American College of Emergency Physicians are doing some outreach on the Hill. I think this is an issue that they want Congress to take a closer look at. And I think that there's hope of some kind of relief that could be there or funding that could help alleviate the problem in terms of what they anticipate seeing. They've kind of been making this push for a number of years in terms of the buildup to the Affordable Care Act. And I don't know that there's exactly a fix-all answer for this. I know that there's real concern about a shortage of primary care physicians in the country. And also, I think there's some concern about the Medicaid reimbursement being one reason that doctors are turning patients away. So these are probably all issues that they're talking to lawmakers on the Hill about right now.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Stephanie Armour. I understand that ERs are getting an overflow of patients with mental health issues.
That's a huge problem. And what's happened is that a number of mental health facilities around the country have closed as we've moved to more people being treated in community settings or on an outpatient basis. And the problem is that people who have an acute mental health emergency go to the emergency room. There's just no beds. At one hospital I spoke to had to board someone in the ER for more than 30 days.
Did you say 30 days? I think that would be a danger to everyone involved.
I think that the concern is across the board, there's a significant cost to the emergency rooms for keeping these psychiatric patients there. And there's also real concern about how staying in an ER for such a protracted period of time can harm people with mental health issues. Someone who may be suicidal, for example, and needs a watcher 24 hours, they're in a very noisy environment that's not very conducive to the kind of mental health healing that they need.
Thanks, Stephanie. Wall Street Journal reporter Stephanie Armour. It is 14 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday. It is now 10 minutes before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is back. She has America's first news.
Good morning. November elections are taking shape. Republican Senate leader Mitch McConnell easily beat a Tea Party primary candidate in Kentucky. Establishment-backed GOP members also beat Tea Party rivals in Georgia and Oregon. And there were similar defeats in Pennsylvania and Idaho. Pennsylvania's Republican Governor Tom Corbett will face businessman Tom Wolf, setting up one of the top gubernatorial races this fall.
We have a big job between now and November 4th, and that is to make sure that we deliver on the promise that the Democratic voters of Pennsylvania have placed on all of our shoulders.
A federal judge has struck down Pennsylvania's ban on same-sex marriage. The ruling would make Pennsylvania the 19th state to grant legal standing for same-sex weddings, but the state has 30 days to decide whether to appeal. The Connecticut legislature has okayed a bill aimed at protecting consumers from ex-securities brokers who've lost their licenses but continue to sell financial products as licensed insurance brokers. Connecticut joins a handful of other states that are addressing this issue, including Florida and Utah. Netflix plans to launch in several European countries, including Germany and France, by year's end. The company says it will release information about pricing, programming, and supported devices at a later date. U.S. stock futures are edging a little bit higher after a negative day for Wall Street. In fact, the Dow fell to its lowest level in 3 weeks, losing about 138 points. Retail stocks took a beating after various chains reported weak financials. Brian Battle is with Performance Capital.
The weather's over. We're into the spring. We should be seeing better sales. But even worse than that, the forecasts going forward are getting turned down.
The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 were down yesterday. Fed Chair Janet Yellen delivers the NYU commencement address at Yankee Stadium today. And this afternoon, the Fed releases the minutes from its last meeting. If true, it's a gruesome new definition for the old phrase chewing your ear off, with a report that Los Angeles Dodgers minor league teammates Alex Guerrero and Miguel Olivo got into a fight. And the LA Times quoting agent Scott Boras is saying that Olivo bit off part of one of Guerrero's ears.
Okay, little Mike Tyson and Vander Holyfield flashback there. Oh my.
That's pretty gross, if
That's
true.
Unbelievable. That's a couple of angry guys right there. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Time now for a small business update, and it's brought to you by Cadillac. You're always ready to go the extra mile. Fortunately, so is your Cadillac. Cadillac's certified service experts keep your Cadillac as ready to go as you are. Visit CadillacCertifiedService.com for service offers. Look around when you get to the office today and see if you notice this. An estimated 4 million office workers are too tall or too short for the standard office chair. Yet it's awkward to ask for a different chair, leading some employees to snatch replacements from another department or just suffer in silence. More from Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger in Portland. Sue, what percent of workers face this problem?
8% of the workforce is stuck in chairs that really don't fit. They're either at the extremely short or extremely tall, and it can cause some real pain points.
That's a big number, 8%?
Most furniture designers shoot for the 5th to 95th percentile of the workforce in terms of size, and they design their chairs and desks to suit those folks. So that leaves a significant minority not very comfortable and sometimes feeling shy or awkward about speaking up about it.
Well, how come? Why would they be shy?
The people I interviewed and colleagues I know, it's embarrassing enough to be really tall or really short. You get lots of jokes about, oh, how's the weather up there?
Oh, yeah.
And you really don't want to call attention to yourself. Others I interviewed said they don't want to be seen as a special needs person. They want to be a good team player and just fit in and make do. But the problem is making do is more painful ergonomically for these folks, and it can be a real source of stress.
Wow. So all this technology today, and we can't get an adjusting chair that fits everybody?
The good news is we definitely are getting those chairs. Designers are doing a very good job of providing to the market chairs in three sizes, such as Herman Miller's Aeron chair or a new chair by Steelcase called Gesture, which adjusts in numerous different ways. The problem is that office facility managers are often on a tight budget. They order a standard chair, and then people don't know how to adjust them, so that maybe you could get a pretty close to a good fit, or with a little adjustment, you could get, you know, almost perfect fit, but people just don't speak up about it.
So I'm curious, because I remember car makers a while back had to adjust, the seats for Americans because we're bigger, right? I mean, we're just getting to be bigger people or fatter or whatever. I mean, is that an issue with chairs? Have chairs not adjusted over the years to folks just getting bigger?
It is. And also, Steelcase just finished an 11-country study and found extremes of all sizes are more common. The workforce is more diverse. We have many more ethnicities and nationalities in the workforce, and people come in all different shapes. So the folks at the extremes are increasing in number.
Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger from Portland, Oregon. That'll do it for this hour. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to The Wall Street Journal This Morning. For more, follow The Wall Street Journal This Morning on Facebook and Twitter, and now on TuneIn.